Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. You might call this one of our continuing conversations with The Wire, but it's much more than that. We're about to have a conversation with Lance Reddick, who many of you who are Wire fans remember so well when he played Lieutenant Cedric Daniels. He has been on Law & Order, CSI Miami, to Dexter Tom Basil, a member from the series Oz. I remember that even before I saw him in this. He's been in many, many films, which we'll talk about during the course of this conversation. And two things we just found out about Lance Reddick. One, that he is a singer and a musician and has an album out, which we're going to talk about, Contemplations and Remembrances. And he's from Baltimore. Who knew either one of those things? And Lance, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you, Mark.
So really, Baltimore. I mean, I never knew. Because when you went to The Wire, you didn't come to The Wire via being a Baltimorean. You came to The Wire via being an actor.
Yeah, I was cast out of New York at the time.
Right. That's pretty funny.
And it was the second time I'd shot in Baltimore.
Really? What was the other time?
The Corner.
Oh, look, that's right. You were in The Corner as well.
Yeah.
That's right. So you grew up in this town, and your parents were school teachers. Your father was a lawyer. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, my mother was actually, she taught in the Baltimore City. I think she taught in the county when she was younger, and then in the city later. But she taught for 40 years in the school system. And I don't remember how long my father taught, because by the time I was born, he was he'd already graduated from law school.
That's wild. But now, of course, you live New York, L.A.
Yeah, I mean, actually, well, I lived in New York for 12 years after I got out of drama school, and then I moved to L.A. about 2005, so 6 years ago.
Everybody has to migrate there for some reason for some time, don't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where I waited a long time before I made the move, and eventually I just felt like that was kind of the place to be if I wanted a career in film, so.
So when we see you on celluloid, when we see you on television, we all assume that your first passion was acting and being an actor. But clearly with this album, this incredible jazz CD that you put out, Contemplations and Remembrances, it turns out that your first love, your first foray into even being taught in art was the world of music.
Yeah, I was always a musician growing up. Growing up, I never dreamed I'd be an actor. I acted in college for fun, but it was never anything that I took seriously. let me rephrase that. I was serious about it, but I mean, I didn't think that, you know, I never thought I'd be an actor. I started acting. I decided to try my hand as an actor professionally when I was 27. And I went back to school when I was 29. I was one of the oldest people in my class, actually.
And so when you studied music, I read you went to the Eastman School?
Yeah, I studied classical music. I thought I was going to be a classical composer.
Huh.
I grew up studying classical music, playing the piano, singing in the choir.
And you went to Grayson St. Peter's, is that what I read?
Yeah, I went to Grayson St. Peter's for elementary school, and then junior high school and high school I went to French school.
And studied the Peabody as well?
Yeah, I studied Peabody. I started studying theory and piano at Peabody in seventh grade. Although I actually had started studying piano probably when I was six.
So, and did I read that you dropped out of Eastman School of Music and decided to pursue music, a career in music?
Yeah, I realized that, I realized that I was in denial, that I didn't really want to be a classical musician, that I wanted to be a rock star. And I dropped out of school. I got married pretty much as soon as I left school.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved to Boston because that's where my wife at the time, she was from, and she had gotten a job there, and I didn't. So
when you made that foray into music and left, I read another interesting piece about you that was interesting, and why you left kind of the world of rock, that there is a racial divide in music that you found.
Yeah, although, you know, that's not the, you know, it's interesting. I was kind of subliminal, subconsciously aware of it, but that's not the reason I left. I left that pursuit at the time simply because I wasn't making it. I became much more aware kind of the racial divide as I got older. more as just as I became more aware of race, just on a personal level.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I started pursuing acting was because honestly it was just kind of a move of desperation, because at the time I was working 7 days a week. I was working odd jobs. I was waiting tables, and I was working as an artist model, and I was delivering newspapers. And I had a back injury, actually. I had been up for 24 hours, and I had come off a double shift of waiting tables, and I went straight to a double shift of delivering newspapers. And the newspapers that I delivered were big, heavy bundles to the financial district down in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, after being up for 24 hours, when you're young, you just kind of work. You just think you can do anything. So you know, after working on it, because I also, in addition to working 7 days a week, I also worked out every day. So I was always working on sleep deprivation. It was just one of those instances where I just went to pick up a heavy bundle about 5:36 in the morning, and I felt something in my back, and I just kind of ignored it. And over the next couple of weeks, it got worse and worse and worse until one day I woke up and I couldn't get out of bed.
Wow.
And so I was laid up for about 2 weeks, and it was several months before my back really kind of was back to normal. And while I was kind of in bed convalescing is when I started thinking, you know what, I need to, this recording studio that I've hooked up with, you know, I had to really kind of assess my life, and I realized that they were just taking me for a ride. And I realized that I had to just kind of admit that to myself. And I would have to start from scratch. And really, I just, you know, I knew I was good at acting, so I figured, well, I can sing and I can act, so let me try that. So I just opened up the Boston Phoenix, which is Boston's kind of
underground paper.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's their version of kind of Village Voice.
Right.
And I just started looking for auditions. And I went on a couple musical theater auditions and realized that that was not it for me. Because even though I have a nice voice, I wasn't that kind of a, you know, singer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started going to straight acting auditions and getting cast in local theater in Boston.
And from there, you went to Yale Drama and
And from there, I applied to Yale really on a lark and got in.
This is great. What we haven't done yet is jump into your music. I want to play Our Journey, and then we'll talk about that when we come back.
Okay,
right?
Great.
We're talking to Lance Riddick. You know him from The Wire. You hear the music beneath us. It's an incredible CD, Contemplations and Remembrances. We'll be right back.
My life and gently took my hand. Then we began a soulmate's journey. Pencils in our hands, they moved together. You drawing to my music and my words. We strolled through fields of symphonies and masterpieces painted on the sky. Rose petals rained on you and I. Like two children at play on a swing set of dreams, on a jungle gym of schemes, on our journey. As we left through the days making love, through the nights on our wings, taking flight on our journey.
The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555.
Playing house I thought would be a simple game. You'd work while I create fortune and fame. It was my calling. Capering from job to job like skipping rope. Or playing hopscotch.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're here with Lance Riddick. You know him from The Wire, many of the things on TV. But what we didn't know about Lance Riddick, besides the fact that he's a Baltimorean and grew up here, is that he is an incredible singer and musician and has turned to jazz after being taught classical music in his early life. And the CD is called Contemplations and Remembrances. And we're listening to this cut under us that we came out with and coming back in with called Our Journey. And Lance, let's just talk a bit about this CD and and these particular, and we've got some songs that we'll hear as we talk together. Well, let's talk about our journey. Then I'm going to launch into a bit about how you got into this album.
Okay.
But talk about that this particular piece, because each one of these songs is like a standalone philosophical poem.
Well, our journey was actually that was kind of my first. Well, not my first. I mean, actually, Time to Say Goodbye was actually my first kind of attempt at writing a kind of a jazz ballad. But our journey was, you know, at the time that I wrote Our Journey, we were shooting the first season of The Wire. And at the time, I was listening to, for about 2 years, I was listening to Miles Davis and Herbie Hancock obsessively. And a lot of times I won't know where I'm going to start when I start to write a song. I'll just kind of free write. And Our Journey, aside from Miles Davis, probably the biggest influence in my songwriting, in both his approach to lyrics and his approach to music, is Sting. Our Journey is really, it's a song about my ex-wife and my relationship with her, and kind of how, you know, it came from kind of two kids, you know, with dreams, and then kind of dealing with reality.
You can hear your little girls all through that song.
Say that again?
Your little girl is all through that song.
Yeah. Well, both my kids are.
Both your kids.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. So, I tried to, because Sting has been such a huge influence on me, I really, really think of lyrics as poetry. So I try to, it's not that I'm trying to make things complex, but I try to make the lyrics and the music as rich as possible. More often than not, I'll start with the lyrics, and then I'll start working on the music, and then they'll kind of end up I'll finish writing them in tandem.
That's interesting. And you, but these songs do. I mean, they're part of your life, but they're also, it seems, you kind of take a very almost philosophical approach to things. It feels
I feel that when I write something, you know, rather than it just being kind of, how do I put this? When I think about kind of the songs that really move me and or the films or performances that really move me, even though I think on the one hand they need to be, they don't always have to be, but generally they're very personal. So it's as though you're listening to or watching, you know, someone's very personal experience. But I think what makes them great is that there's a universal appeal, because at the end of the day, most of us have, you know, as we go through life, we tend to have, you know, the same issues, the same kinds of things that we deal with in life, and it's just a matter of kind of the different spin that life gives us based on our background and the culture that we grew up in.
Let's slide into another cut here, and we can talk about a range of things as we have this conversation here today with Lance Reddick. Of course, you know him from The Wire and many other incredible TV and film performances that he has done. His latest we're talking about here is a CD, a jazz CD, that he's going back to his music roots and the soul of his work in many ways. It's called Contemplations and Remembrances. This is a piece called Hey John, and let's just take a minute or so to hear a bit of this, and we'll come back
from Lance. In the city night, under the glow of a street light that's dim. Pale skin, fishnets torn, rail thin, battered and worn high heels, with a long vacant stare at the headlights white glare as a window. In these alleyways, wrapped in long blankets of shadows, he
So this piece, Hey John, Lance, talk about where this comes from for you, what it's saying to us and to you.
Wow, well, you know, it's interesting because Hey John, if you listen to the lyrics, obviously it's about a prostitute.
Right.
A street walker who, this is not a high call girl who goes to hotels. So this is not somebody who's basically just struggling to, you know, it's like scratching out a living. And honestly, when I started trying to write the song, I started trying to write it from the point of the John, and it just wasn't very interesting. So I thought, well, what if I write it from the point of view of the prostitute? And it got much more interesting to me. And for me, the message more than anything else is that, you know, even though I try to paint a very vivid picture of kind of her experience on the first two verses, when it gets into the bridge, when I feel like it gets to the point mm-hmm. of the song, if you want to say that there's this, like a message,
mm-hmm.
And I'm always kind of hesitant to say that there's necessarily a message per se, but it's that, you know, we're all human beings, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we tend to look at each other based on our labels. And those labels have significance based on how we've been programmed by society. But when you strip away the labels, you know, this is a human being who has may have a friend, may have a lover, may have kids, may have dreams. And Junior just kind of ended up here for whatever reason.
And
we're all human.
I'm interested in that how you came to this song in terms of the perspective you started writing it and where you decided to go instead. I'm kind of glad you did that.
You know, and it's interesting because there's a song. There's a very very cool song about it. Man, I can't remember the name of it. The song, it's on Sting's album Brand New Day.
Uh huh.
And it's about a male transvestite prostitute.
Right.
And, you know, it's not that I was trying to write about that, because I'm not sure that I was, I wasn't trying to imitate that song. I mean, they don't even sound alike. But I feel like that's a kind of a perfect example of trying to, you know, give a perspective that most people, you know, the average person doesn't think about. But at the same time, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know. I do know what you mean. It's interesting that it's an album that you picked. And I think when we come back, one of the things I'm really curious in exploring with you is those who influence your music, and the world that influence your music. We're talking with Lance Reddick, and we're talking about his incredible new album, Contemplations and Remembrances. We are going to go out with a little time to say goodbye, which was the first thing that he really wrote, as he told us.
And
we'll be right back.
Nothing else to say. Still you ask the question why, and I struggle to explain for the thousandth time again how sometimes we grow apart. For we each have different needs, and no matter where we start, we each grow at different speeds, planting, sowing different seeds. Where do I go from here? How should I feel? Love is still binding, but pain seems to steal all the joy from all the beautiful memories from us. But when it's time to say goodnight and you ask me please to stay, my heart rises to my throat. I can find no words to say, so I have to.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, where you can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We are talking with Lance Reddick. His new CD, his CD is called Contemplations and Remembrances. Of course, you know Lance Reddick is an incredible actor in so many things. We've seen him in The Wire. His character there was just one of the most intense characters in The Wire for all of us and in many other pieces on TV and film. But his heart and soul is in his music. Not that it's not in his acting, but it's in his music where he started. And this is his jazz CD release, Contemplations and Remembrances. And Lance, your influences is interesting. I mean, here you started out life thinking you were going to be a classical composer.
Yeah.
Slide into rock, but then you started discovering Miles Davis, Sting, and some of the great jazz folks. And your head was turned. Your musical soul was turned.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I'm not even sure. I mean, I started listening to, not Miles so much, more Herbie Hancock when I was in high school.
Uh-huh.
Because the two albums that I got, you know, what I got Herbie, I got Headhunters when I was in, I think, seventh grade. So, which was Herbie's first kind of funk album. And then when I was 16, I got VSOP Quintet, which is a tour of kind of most of the cats that played with Miles in the late 60s. Herbie and Freddie Hubbard is playing trumpet. But, you know, Tony Williams and Ron Carter and Wayne Shorter. And, you know, but I grew up, you know, even though I grew up studying classical music, I grew up listening. It was like my guilty pleasure. I grew up listening to pop music.
Uh-huh.
And you know, kind of syrupy love songs. I was kind of addicted to that stuff. And when I was in music school, there was a buddy of mine. His name was David Wallenberger, and we were both composition majors. And David was two things that he literally, like, he just would not leave me alone about were Sting and Stephen Sondheim. And in both instances, eventually he cornered me and made me listen. So he made me listen to the entirety of Sting's first solo album, Dreams of the Blue Turtles. And then later that summer when I was visiting him at his house in New Jersey, he cornered me and made me listen to all of Sweeney Todd. And I thought Sweeney Todd was great. Honestly, when I first listened to Sting's album, Dreams of the Blue Turtles, I didn't really get it. And it wasn't until a year later when I was driving through the streets of Gloucester. It was this summer right after I just got married. Something came on the radio. And it was, If You Need Somebody, Set Them Free.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm driving, I hear this tune, I'm like, man, what's this? It's like, you know, it's like you, even though you've heard something, it's like when you really hear it for the first time. And so I went out and got the album, and I listened to it over and over and over and over again. And at first, I was like, most of the songs were like, I'm not sure, what is he doing? What is he doing? And then the more I listened to it, I thought, oh, that's what he's doing. That's what he's doing. And then every time a new Sting album would come out, I would get it. When his second album came out, which was Nothing Like the Sun, I was working in the jewelry and crystal store. My wife at the time was the head jeweler, and I was doing lapidary work.
Really?
I learned to do to sand and polish stones and crystals. It was like this new age crystal store. So I was basically locked in this like little room for about 7 hours a day, and I would just be playing music over and over and over again, and mostly what I'd be playing would be Sting.
That's very funny.
And I just was obsessed with kind of, this was still when I was wanted to be a pop rock star, and I was obsessed with being the Black Sting. And it wasn't until, a few years later I started acting, and my music kind of fell by the wayside. And it really wasn't until after I'd gotten out of graduate school, and I was acting, and I was living in New York, and this was in the early to mid-90s. And actually, this is the late 90s when I started, you know, writing again. And it was only because my daughter said to me, you know, Dad, you know, because I would sing these songs that I had written in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, you know, sing them around the house. And my daughter said to me, Dad, you should really do something with that. And she was about 10, 11 years old at the time. And I said, well, sweetheart, it's too late. I'm too old. And she said, I don't know, Dad. That sounds like an excuse.
She was how old then?
She was, I think she was 11. She said, I don't know, Dad. That sounds like an excuse. And then she just walked away and wasn't playing with something. And I was kind of left dumbfounded. I'm like, wow. So I just decided just to start writing for myself. And then I decided to try to, a couple years later, you know, very slowly, because I've never been prolific. And then I decided to do a songwriting demo. And then the songwriting, as I wrote more songs, the songwriting demo kind of morphed into an album. And over time, you know, I realized that, you know, one of the problems that I'd had for myself with the music that I wrote was I always felt that what I wanted to write was more sophisticated than what the market would bear. That's why when I heard Sting, it was such a revelation, because I thought, oh wow, somebody who's actually doing what I like kind of dream of doing in pop rock music, and he's like making money doing it. And then, to be perfectly frank, somewhere in there, I don't remember how I got obsessed with Miles.
Yep.
But and it may have had something to do with. Well, let me go back. You know, as I was writing, one of the things that I realized as I started writing again in the late 90s, I started in the early 2000s, I started to realize that for the kind of music that I wanted to write, the medium of jazz would give me much more freedom. And then I realized that jazz always scared me because I didn't grow up playing jazz, so I felt like I didn't have I just didn't have an ear for jazz.
Right.
So to me, even with all my training, to me, jazz musicians were like they were like their own category. They were sorcerers to me. They were magic.
Yeah.
And so I just said, well, you know what? Maybe I'll never be able to do what they do, just sitting down and playing or even singing. Because I was a crooner. I've never been a scatter.
Mm-hmm.
I said, at least I could do my best to try to write. And so I just listened and listened and listened and listened and listened and kind of studied. I just listened to Jack, to Miles and all the stuff that he was doing in the late 50s, you know, when he really kind of broke out with modern jazz. It's funny because I actually started with his first CD, The Birth of Cool,
yes,
which came out in 49.
Right.
With cool jazz, and then his shifted to modern jazz and the more avant-garde stuff in the late 50s. And then he and Herbie Hancock were really, you know, I just listened to them obsessively, all the stuff that they did in the 60s.
That's very interesting. I love that, both that genre of music. I'm just a Miles maniac. All of his schools are just always grabbed me deeply.
And also for me, Miles was, he was the other person. For me, his approach to, philosophically, his approach to music is so similar to Sting's. Because, you know, I remember hearing Sting talk in an interview once. He said, you know, to me, it's not like there's... I don't try... And this is an awful paraphrase from a memory that's years old, so please forgive me.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, my memory of what Sting said was that, you know, he sees music as all one thing, not separated into categories.
Hmm.
So even though he may, you know, for the sake of having to label it, because that's what we do.
Right.
He may be in the pop rock category or adult contemporary. You know, you can hear, you know, I've heard, you know, a couple of Sting tunes that are country tunes.
Right.
Even, you know, it's interesting. I was watching in a hotel room last night. I was watching The Green Hornet, and I'm listening to this country tune. I'm like this, and if I didn't know the lyrics, I wouldn't know that it was a Sting tune, because even though it's called "I Hung My Head" and it's from his Mercury Falling album, and that tune is very complex. I mean, most of his tunes are very complex, but that tune is very complex because even though it deals with even thematically, I mean, he deals with a kid who's out in the cold, and he borrows his brother's gun, and it accidentally goes off in his head, and he kills somebody. It's called "I Hung My Head." And,
right.
But it's a 9-4. So it's not. I mean, so structurally, it's not even in It's not even a 9-8 where it's 3-3-3. It's 5+4, 5+4. So listening to it, it's very complex rhythmically. But when they were singing it in the background at this funeral in this movie, The Green Hornet,
right.
the guy was singing the same song, but he did it in 4, and it could have been just a regular country song.
See, and what's really beautiful hearing you describe this stuff. Your technical understanding of music is coming through with the passion of it at the same time, which I think that many of us get. And what you're hearing under us at the moment is the last song on the CD called Remembering. What you've been hearing as we are, as Lance Reddick and I have been talking together, the album is Contemplations and Remembrances. He is going back to his musical roots. When we come back, we will pick up the conversation, so please stay with us.
An impromptu rendezvous with you, laughing in the rain, making love on a rooftop as it pours in the afternoon. And
welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And Andres, you're hearing this beautiful Spanish guitar from the cut Women in Black in Lance Reddick's CD, Contemplations and Remembrances. Lance, this is a really beautiful piece. It grabbed me because the guitar grabbed me immediately, just because I'm just a Spanish music nut.
As far as Women in Black goes, you know, it's interesting because I was listening to... obsessively at the time that I wrote this, Sting, which is my favorite Sting album, Ten Summoner's Tales.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite songs, it's Probably Me, which is one of the few Sting songs that I can only think of a couple of songs of Sting's that I know that he actually co-wrote with someone else. And that one in Shape of My Heart, which is also on that same album. But anyway, I was thinking, you know, I kind of want to write a song kind of like that.
Right.
And that's how Woman in Black came up. And it really was that whole story in Woman in Black is a complete fantasy. Whereas a lot of these stories are taken, you know, either from my life or, you know, from things that I've seen. Woman in Black was just kind of a complete fantasy. What would it be like, you know what I mean?
Some kid in a bar. That's good to throw that in. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I like
yeah.
that. We're talking with Lance Reddick. About his jazz CD, Contemplations and Remembrances. We're going to hear some more cuts here. I was thinking about, this is a digression, but let me digress for just a moment. When I was thinking about the character you played on The Wire, Lieutenant Daniels, of course, that's where you've had all the women fainting with your scenes and your, you became the body of the...
you know, it's funny because sometimes I forget that because it was only like a couple times.
Right.
And the first time it was by accident.
Accident?
Well, yeah, because it was a scene where I was supposed to be in my T-shirt,
uh-huh.
and the director just asked me if I would mind taking my shirt off, and I said, "No, are you sure?" And he said, "Yeah," and then I did, and then it just turned into a thing. Because for me, you know, being on The Wire, you know, I was a guy who I would have women come up to me and say, "Would you tell Stringer I love him?" So, you know, I was second string heartthrob.
Until that scene. then the world changed. But you even though you started world as a musician and you've done a lot of serious roles, some of them cops, but other than that, more than that, I mean, you're a very serious actor. And I was really interested to read on your site who the kind of actors that spoke to you, Marlon Brando, Charles Laughton, Lawrence Fishburne, Dustin Hoffman. And you call Daniel Day-Lewis the Mozart of acting. I mean, I find that really interesting.
I feel like that quote's going to follow me for the rest of my life.
But it's a good quote, man. He is an amazing actor, the way he can transform himself into almost anything.
Yeah, I mean, for me, transformation was always kind of the bar.
Right,
When I became an actor, I knew that I wanted to be a transformational character actor from the very beginning.
Right.
So, and to me, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis was kind of the height
right.
of that.
So where do you want to go as an actor next?
You know, I want to keep. Honestly, I want to keep doing more varied roles. because for the first time in my career, I feel like I'm in danger of becoming typecast because my role on Fringe is so similar
right,
to The
right,
Wire.
Right, 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 right.
And so I just want to do things as different as possible. And so really what I'm working on hardest now, in addition to just trying to maintain the level of my craft, and is producing. So I'm really, really interested in producing my own films and television.
Well, this is something that I want to. We have to have many more conversations as you lean towards that. I can't wait to hear what comes out of that.
Yeah, well, I can't either. It's a whole nother animal.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and it's been a real challenge for me because I feel like as a personality, I'm really not quite built for that. Because you know, in some ways, I'm kind of the stereotypical, you know, sensitive artist as opposed to, you know, the hard driving business guy.
Right, right.
Which you need. But at the end of the day, you know, also. You know, I have to be honest that for, you know, it's always a different game for actors of color, and so particularly
always.
For as an older black dramatic character actor, and I probably shouldn't even put dramatic because I do comedy just because I've done plenty of it on stage, and that's another one of the things I'm really really itching to get into, is to start doing more on comedy. You know, but you know, as a black character actor, you so often feel like Hollywood's just not looking for you, even though you know I've been very 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 fortunate with my career, and so you know I've reached a point where I just feel like if I'm going to have the kind of career that I want to have in the future and make sure that I'm part of the kind of projects that I want to be part of, I have to take some responsibility for trying to create them myself.
Lance Reddick, this has just been a pleasure. Lance Reddick has been talking about his life as an actor, his latest incredible CD, Contemplations and Remembrances. As we finish the conversation, you've been hearing cut number 5 on the CD, Voice, which is just an amazing cut. And I can't wait to see what comes out in that musically and also theatrically in your life, Lance Reddick. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Oh, thank you, Mark. It's been a real pleasure.
I've enjoyed it a great deal. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. Schizophrenic illusions, paranoid delusions, voices in the air, voices everywhere, but where?